What's up, everybody? This is Ryan Staley, and you are listening to the Sales and Marketing Built Freedom Podcast, where we share with you the underground ninja skills and tactics that the top sales and marketing leaders are using to create financial and lifestyle freedom. And the question that everybody is asking is, how do I create financial and lifestyle freedom for me? That is the question, and this show is the answer. So welcome, everybody, to the Sales and Marketing Built Freedom show. I have Max Outschuler. Yeah. Told you I had a hard time with it. So welcome, Max. Max did a lot, man. Max is the founder of Sales Hacker. In addition to that, he's also the VP at Outreach. And on top of it, he's written 3 books, angel invested in over 50 companies. Did I miss anything else? Is that it, man? Is that all you got? Or what else we got?
Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I don't know. It sounds good. It's good.
So anyways, man. Yeah, no, really cool background that you have. Just touched on a lot of different areas. And so super excited to have you on, man. And so why don't you, I mean, because like that gives folks somewhat of an idea on just kind of what you're into. But you've had a really interesting journey. And I know you started in the entrepreneurial journey a while back, and have kind of evolved. You're doing some really interesting things now. So can you just give everybody kind of your superhero origin story in terms of how you got to this point?
Yeah, I mean, depends how far back you want to go. I could start selling Halloween candy on the school bus and getting the principal calling my house and telling my dad that it's frowned upon.
Cool. You know, give some of that, man. I want to hear like little Max running around, you know?
That's back in like 8th grade where, you know, you used to go trick-or-treating. Up the little bag, and you know, I think I had like a pumpkin,
My kids still have those, the plastic one.
Yeah, and then my dad would put it on the top of the refrigerator, and I'd get like one piece of candy a day. And they didn't know that I could climb up on the counter and grab all the candy if I wanted to. And then I'd shove it in my backpack, and then like kids would go to school with a little bit of money for school supplies, and I'd end up selling them candy on the bus. So instead of them getting pencils and pencil sharpeners and erasers and, you know, binders and index cards, they were getting Skittles and you know, mini Twix or whatever it is, and I was making some money. So it's just funny, enterprising young, so like, I don't know, somewhere 3rd, 4th, 5th grade or something like that. But that's where the entrepreneurial journey started. And then when I was in college, I was actually an architecture major. I just like to build stuff. Really was interested in building houses, buildings. I didn't know if I was going to do residential or commercial or whatnot. It was really early on, and then the housing market crashed. Ended up pivoting to what was called a Bachelor of Interdisciplinary Studies. We called it BIS. It also stood for Barely in School, because it was just such a breeze of a program at Arizona State. And that's where I started this kind of bike share program. Called it Rack and Ride, and we wanted to build one of the first bike share programs in the United States. So they had them in Europe at the time. They had them in Barcelona and London and Paris, but we wanted to put one at Arizona State. Won a business plan competition, got a grant from the university, and got a contract signed with the university for exclusive rights to commercial bike sharing, but that failed. Nobody was giving two 22-year-olds couple million dollars to do bike racks and computers in 2009, right after a recession. So ended up going from there to doing another company, another startup called Last Call Social, which was doing social media campaign management for small businesses, bars, restaurants, real estate agents, things like that. And our goal with that was to make American money while living abroad. So we ended up living in Costa Rica, Nicaragua for about 5 months, and then came back, realized we were a little too ambitious for the whole kind of surfing and drinking and hanging out lifestyle businesses, whatever you call them, and ended up applying to a bunch of jobs in San Francisco where I'd never been before or lived before. And the main one that I wanted was Udemy on an education marketplace. Mm-hmm. They were looking for their first biz dev hire, someone to build out the supply side, the sales side of that marketplace. And, I flew to San Francisco with a backpack, went on couchsurfing.com, bounced around, did 7 hours worth of interviews after a couple homework assignments, and got the job. So built out, got my, I'd say that was like my big break, got into tech, got a chance at a company that had raised about $1 million in venture funding from 500 startups and a couple others. And I was there through their seed A and B rounds of funding, built out that sales channel for them, hired a bunch of folks, took them from, it was the 8th employee to somewhere around 60 employees, started to get a reputation for being somebody who could, build a really hacky sales process at an early stage startup. Our mantra is we got to figure out how to generate more revenue using less resources. And we didn't have what, the big players in our space had. And, we were able to grow very quickly, and other founders and VCs would ask our founders and VCs how we were doing some of it. And people would point folks in my direction, and that spawned a sales hacker meetup where we would kind of get together with a couple people locally in San Francisco at the time. And, really kind of just jam on like, what are the cool new sales hacks that you guys are doing? And we had folks that were in there that were doing, phantom JavaScript on scraping sites and pulling those into spreadsheets, and then having virtual assistants in the Philippines dial down or email down those lists. We were using early sales engagement platforms like TowDap, which no longer exists. And those, Filipino VAs to kind of outsource sales development almost completely. And it was stuff that you kind of get away with when you're super early stage, scrappy company, just trying to like throw everything at the wall and MVP things that don't really scale. But it was okay. It only needed to get you to, the next point of survival. The goal of raising a seed was to raise an A, and the goal of raising an A was to raise a B to get enough enough money to have a real business and start thinking 2 years, at a time, instead of like, we just got to get to the end of this year. And so built that reputation, built that business, wrote my first book, Hacking Sales. First of all, I'm getting ahead of myself. Started Sales Hacker from there as a media company, did a blog, meetups, conferences, started doing some angel investing, wrote my first book, Hacking Sales. Ran that for 5 years. One of my first investments was a company called Outreach back in late 2014, early 2015. And ended up coincidentally selling my company to Outreach in 2018. I sat down with Manny at his Unleash conference. They just raised a $65 million Series D at a $500 million valuation. I said, hey, congrats on the round. What keeps you up at night? He said, marketing. I said, oh, well, we've got a media company with 70,000 B2B salespeople, and you've got best in class sales software. Let's figure this thing out. So, we closed the deal 3 months later, and, I came in as VP of marketing, even though that wasn't the long-term, idea. It was what was needed at the time. We ended up hiring a CMO a year later. I moved into the sales engagement role, more focused on category creation, evangelism, getting involved in some of our more strategic deals. Also started the GTM fund, which is a fund, an early stage fund with about 117 LPs that are all VPC level sales, marketing, and customer success leaders. And we're investing in seed A and B rounds, really just the best companies we can find that we can support, and think we'll multiply at a nice clip. And, yeah, and then I guess the only thing other than that worth mentioning is I wrote a book on career hacking, which kind of details some advice from my journey building Sales Hacker, coming up through Udemy, all the other stuff that I did. I'll have to do a volume two now with my life advice from my 3 years at Outreach that I'm coming up on here soon, but we'll have to put that in there. And then we wrote a book on sales engagement as well. And a really interesting fun fact about my book writing, I wrote Hacking Sales in 6 days from Bali. I wrote Career Hacking in 3 days from Bali. And I wrote Sales Engagement in 5 days from Miami. So I am not the type of person who can set aside an hour a day for a year and do anything. I am all get my breaks when I have to do something.
So 6 days, 3 days. Okay. So you got, of course, that's a nice little fun fact. You know what I mean? That was like, I had out with Chris Farley for a weekend in Vegas. That's like one of those things.
Did that happen?
I have it. That would be a cool fun fact.
Cool fun fact. You probably wouldn't be alive. I don't know. That would be.
Yeah, it's true.
I'd call you a too fun of a fact.
Yeah, exactly. I believe it or not, and I don't have it hanging up yet because my wife's like, no, I gotta hang it in a certain way. I literally have a picture of like Tommy Boy and Richard where he's like lighting the car on fire. And anyways, basically I'm gonna have it. It's like a painting though. It's like your elephant painting of that. So anyways, oh cool. So I just got a notice that they're having an issue on LinkedIn's end with this. So anyways, so we're still streaming, but they're having some issues on LinkedIn apparently. So anyways, right as you're about to get into the, you know, the 6-day, 3-day writing books. So how do you do that, man? How do you make that a reality? Cause I'm just curious now, even though I took us down the wrong path, the Chris Farley thing.
Yeah. So my first book, Hacking Sales, I wanted to make it an ebook. I didn't know anything about writing books at the time. And there was like so much new sales technology coming out. I wanted to profile it all. And I had this like skeleton built out of like 12 different chapters, 12 different buckets of technology. And I sent out a type form to like 70 vendors that would fit, their technology would fit in those buckets. And I said, hey, can you fill this out for me? It's like, tell me a little bit about your company. Tell me about like a customer use case, et cetera, et cetera. I got about 50 of those back, which is stupid for the other 20. I don't know why they wouldn't have filled it out. But anyway, got about 50 of those back. And I was like, all right, I got some content. I can like thread through here. This will help me bucket some stuff out. I gotta like actually talk about my process and thread it all together still. And I knew I had like a month in Bali coming up. So I was like, all right, I'll take as much time as I need, set aside, and just like crank on this thing. And I had a week in Gili Trawangan, which is this like tiny island. I think I stayed at a place called Villa de Luz or something like that. And I sat by the pool or the beach for 16 hours a day for 6 days and just cranked this thing out. And next thing I know, I was at 27,000 words. Which, you know, is more than enough for a book. Came home and went on Upwork, which, you know, at the time was Odesk. Found a basic editor who can, like, help me compile the book and do some, you know, grammar copy edit stuff. And through editing, added, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 more words. And then self-published it on Amazon. Sent it out to my Sales Hacker newsletter list and sold a bunch of copies to it. And then after the first 2 months, Wiley came knocking and they said, hey, we want to buy the rights to it. I said no. And then they came back 10 months later and I said yes, because I had already saturated. I mean, I'd already sent it out to everybody I could send it out to. So like I already saturated my network, and then it became published author. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then career hacking was interesting because in 2017, LinkedIn had this algorithm craziness going on where you can like post some career stuff and get like 1 million views and 10,000 likes like pretty easily. So I started taking advantage of that because I'd already had like a follower thing going on. And every time I'd post, like 24 hours later or 48 hours later, I'd copy and paste the post into a Google Doc with the stats. Mm-hmm. Thought nothing of it. I just wanted to see what was resonating, what wasn't, like might as well keep track of it. And next thing you know, I was at 13,000 words, and it was all like really good stuff that people were resonating with because I had the evidence of it. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'll polish this thing up, figure out how to break it out, figure out what needs, you know, what else needs to be covered, what else needed threading through, and turn this into a book. So did that. And that took about 3 days, and did the same thing. Came home, found a editor, and then next thing you know, it's a self-published book. And that one I'm never gonna do the publisher route on. Keeping that one.
It's your baby, you're not giving up that one?
Yeah, it's my life. less of a career one, more of a life one. So keep that.
No, that's cool. I mean, I love that, man. You did both. I mean, it sounds like you kind of crowdsourced the first one just in terms of the concepts, and then you like you said, weaved your process in, which I'd love to hear what that is. And then the second one, you just kind of building it out strategically with posts. I think that's awesome, man. So great way to
do
it, obviously very effectively. So with your process, you said like you had to integrate that into the sales tech. What is your kind of process when you're looking at that? Look at Jake Dunlap. He just makes it sound so easy. Jake's giving you a hard time. He does make it sound so easy, doesn't he, Jake?
I know it sounds so easy. calling. He's probably LinkedIning from the golf course right now. And I know he's golfing in either right now, or he's in the car on the way there, or he's going to be there in an hour because that's Thursday. Anyway, Jake messed me up. What was the question?
I was talking about, you said you just integrated your process in there, like, right? Like he's giving you a crying emoji on there, so can't see the chat. It's giving you a hard time. So yeah, what was your process that you integrated? And Jake said it's in 20 minutes, which is why he's laughing. Okay.
Smart.
Good stuff. I appreciate that, man.
I might end up meeting up with him and Kevin afterwards. Not golfing.
There you go.
So the process for all the books was compile as much information as I could beforehand from on like Hacking Sales and Sales Engagement from credible sources. So Hacking Sales, I got, you know, those 50 vendors to fill out the type form for me. Mm-hmm. For Career Hacking, I wrote that book in like bite-sized LinkedIn posts before I went and like put it together in 3 days. And then Sales Engagement, I think we had like 25 different contributors that were customers of Outreach.
Oh, nice.
That, you know, used Outreach in a really interesting way. And we said, hey, this would be, you know, like, you'd be great to be involved in this book. It's going to be a published book through Wiley. Like, it's a pretty prestigious thing to be involved in. You know, would you want to write like 500 to 1,000 words about how you do this part of the process? Mm-hmm. And then we're able to take that. And I think it makes for a more credible book as well, because it's not just us talking about our own stuff. It's like somebody with a VP title from Adobe and somebody with a VP title from SAP, or somebody from a VP title from, you know, another you know, really credible company, or even folks like Jake who are consultants in the space or trainers in the space or people who run firms that – like live and breathe this stuff and our experts. So I think like if you're writing a book on a topic like this or subject matter like this, it's great to go in and get your peers who are experts to help you out, because one, it makes it easier for you, but two, it adds a ton of credibility.
Oh yeah. I love it, man. Well, let's shift gears, because I think that's fascinating. However, kind of like what I told you, I reached out, put a poll out. I'm like, hey, what are good questions to ask Max? And one of the top ones was scaling startups. And you know, we talked a little bit before. It's like, hey, what? And I was thinking about this. Is like, you know, what would you say are like three systems that you would grow, whether it be sales or marketing, to like scale a startup or scale a business that's, you know, kind of small, mid-sized?
Systems. I think the process is figuring out what your ideal customer looks like, and then going out and finding where all those people live and getting them, you know, into your funnel in some way, shape, or form, whether it's an outbound strategy or driving them to your site, and then nailing the messaging. So it's like almost like a two-step process like that. So if you're super early stage, then you're trying to figure out your ICP. Maybe you can look at complementary vendors. Maybe you look at competitors. But you can kind of start to figure out, like, all right, who should we be targeting? As you got a couple customers, as you start evolving from there, then it's like, where do these people live? Where can I go find? So, like, Airbnb was a great example of this. It's like, our ICP is people who are renting out their houses. Where can I go find that? Well, let's go to Craigslist and scrape Craigslist. If Craigslist, you know, before Airbnb, that's where you went to go see short-term sublets, short-term, you know, rentals. And then from there, you know, what's the message? All right, so you're on it. You got a person on Craigslist. You know that they might be interested in your service that is called Airbnb, and they never heard of it before. It's super early stages of Airbnb. What are you saying to this person that's going to make you sound credible, that they would want to, like, list their house on your platform? And yep. Take money and all that other kind of stuff. So, like, those are the three most important things in any sales process, really. Because then, like, after that, then you can run a scalable or non-scalable process. Like, you can do, you know, there's a lot of spray and pray stuff that's not scalable. You know, you can do the one-to-one stuff. You can scale it in any different way you want to.
What do you, let me take it a step further. So, cause I believe, you know, I agree with all those core concepts, totally makes sense. And, but you mentioned, like, okay, for that sales engagement book, right, there's 25 different companies. like what's, cause those are, that's like the core framework that you talked about. So like how to take it like a couple levels deeper in terms of like what separates the exceptional companies that do that versus the companies that kind of suck at it. Right. Is there something that you're seeing, whether it be from leadership, tech, people, combination of everything, or what do you think is like kind of the big domino when it comes to that?
Well, I mean, I think most companies aren't really rigorous, or the ones that are bad at it aren't really rigorous about understanding their ICP. So it's still like kind of soupy or cloudy. They don't refine it. They like, and then they start the rest of the process before really clarifying that. I think then there's the next step of it, which is like going out and building those lists. You want to make sure you have all of your target accounts lined up. If you've got something that's like ready to sell, then that would be a simple thing to do. I think most people get this step right. I don't think this is the area where like you see a lot of collapse, but then the messaging part is bad. And that part never gets better unless you have a system of action, like an outreach that helps refine over time. And I think there's also a lot of customer development that comes into play here. And it's interesting to see companies go to market, over the past 10 years, and some will do a spray and pray, but they haven't figured out the messaging yet. It's like, all right, well, you're just like wasting a bunch of first touches. Why don't you take a step back and like really talk to your customers, really understand what you need to be saying to the different types of customers that you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Go a little slower and then pour gas on the fire once, you know, it's lit. You know, it's like pouring gas on a fire. It's not lit yet. It's like, well, you're wasting your gas. You're wasting your fuel. And I've seen that a bunch of times. And I've seen like companies where what I see a lot is a company hasn't raised yet, or like raised a seed, but like really needs an A to be around for a long time. Like the seed wasn't enough money. They'll go really hard on trying to get traction to show growth to get the money. And then once the money is in, then they can take a step back and like refine it. And I think that's right. That's fine. It's fine if you do that. What I find is wrong is when they continue to do that after they get the money, or they have the money and they continue to do that. It's like, what are you doing that for? Like you're like, there's no real reason that you need to get some like rocket ship traction right now when you can go back and like rebuild the foundation and make sure that you're building on a solid foundation. And then you turn the rocket boosters on. So I think we're just living in this culture of, you know, everybody wants to be a $1 billion company tomorrow. It's like, okay, well, I don't know if it's going to sink you or what, you know, in the short, long term.
Yeah. I think that's a great perspective. And I see that all the time, man, with companies. They just think if they get funding, it's going to solve everything.
Yeah.
And they have like no sales process in place. They created something and they're like, if I just get money, it's going to solve everything. You know, yeah. I'll just buy my way out of it. So, I mean, you've invested in a ton of companies. Would you say that that's a common thought pattern, or it depends kind of?
Yeah, I'd say I've seen that as a pattern. And I think like, you know, the advice I get is pretty, pretty similar every time I see it. You know, it's like, hey, this is, you got the money in the bank, slow down. Let's build this thing for the long term. You know, it's one of those things where like, you want to get some funding so that you can get some runway, but the first funding you get isn't a ton of runway. So then you want to get more funding so you get some more runway so you could actually be around a year from now. And then at a certain point, it's like, okay, you got enough money where you're probably going to be around for the next 2 years. Like you should start playing a two or three year game, not, you know, this like, hey, we got to make it through this quarter type thing. Cause like eventually that scales out and, you know, stops working. So
it's like a funding Ponzi scheme, if you will. We're just trying to get to the next one.
Yeah. You're just trying to get to the next level, but you know, that's how it is.
Sorry, I don't know why there's so many sirens going by. I'm just gonna play through it, man.
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in my house, man. And Jake's saying, yeah, find something that works first, then worry about scaling versus scale, and then try and find something that works. So spot on, Jake. So when you're saying with the lead list, like, you know, I guess there's so many tools out in the market. I mean, what do you see as some of the most effective tools when it comes to like, so you nail your ICP, you got an awesome understanding of like who your exact targets are. you know, what's the best resources you use for lead lists?
I mean, it's you're probably using a couple different types of resources. So, you know, one type of resource would be like, all right, well, where are you going to find your ICP? Like, could you build lists of those folks, like those accounts that you want to go after? And then there's contact info. So secondary to the actual account or the company you want to go after, but, you know, who at the company are you contacting and how do you get the information for them to contact them? So, at Outreach, we use Zoom Info, on the sales side, Clearbit on the marketing side. I think we have Lead IQ a little bit. We have a little bit of Seamless AI. And I think UK, we use like something called, Viewhurst or something like that. But it's one of the beautiful things about data is, you know, it's not like our business where you're just going to use Outreach. You can use a couple different ones for, you know, different types of data that you need. So, you know, if we go into new markets, we might say, okay, we need a new data source that's, you know, specializes in pharma or something like that. Or if we go to APAC or ANZ or JPAC, whatnot, we might say, oh, well, we need a new data provider that's going to give us data for, you know, companies in this region. So I think it's really just about doing your research on understanding what your ICP is and then going out and finding these databases that can supply you with that contact info. When we were super early at Outreach, we had like Mechanical Turk, like Virtual Assistants in the Philippines, scraping sites and porting that info into our database. You know, the other thing that was a little wonkier about that business, we were reaching out to businesses and individuals. Whereas I think most people listening to this are probably just reaching out to businesses. Mm-hmm. So they might not have that issue. They might be able to just go straight to the databases.
And yeah, so I think that's great. Like, I mean, that's great insight. That's some examples of some great tools. I've used some of those before too and have clients that use them. I guess like on the outbound side, like it's kind of funny because you got two sides of the house, right? You got the folks that are like, they're on their platform. They're like, everything needs to be inbound. Just put good content and they will come, right? which isn't, you know, there's a strategy involved with that, right? However, it seems like it's more of a long game. Unless you're just like a ninja copywriter, content producer, all that stuff. And then you got the outbound, which is more built from what I've seen for speed. Would you say that like if you're, cause I got some feedback on this from some folks, but what would you say in terms of like hitting that outbound part? Like what's the most top three critical things to make that successful? You said messaging and nailing your list, right? We got that, right? But what else? What else just makes it a home run across like all the top customers that you've seen and work with versus the ones that don't? You know, what are the ones that are executing and performing highly at?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting in seat at Outreach and watching our customers and watching, you know, folks that weren't using Outreach and then started using Outreach. I can say that, you know, having a platform like Outreach obviously is going to take you further than anything else. I think if like you use nothing for automation for outbound, you're kind of in the stone ages, you know, it'd be like neglecting email and phone. Like if you're just doing those one off, that's a pretty tough place to be. I think if you use any sales engagement platform, you get levels of automation. Your team is going to be better in 6 months than they are today. Mm-hmm. You get automation, you get workflow, that's all well and good. I think if you use the difference between Outreach and any other platform is with any other platform, I think after 6 months, you're basically plateau. You've got the levels of automation, you got the workflows and you're good. You're not really going to get much better than that. I think Outreach is the only one because of sentiment and attribution and the way that we kind of do our reporting, we allow you to understand like what's actually working and double down on what's working. So if you're an organization that is sending sequences and you're judging the success of them based off reply rates, then you're missing a ton of information. If you're judging it off of, you know, in Outreach, off of attribution, off of meetings booked, and you're able to use sentiment to understand what those replies actually are, then after 6 months, you're better. 12 months, you're better. 18 months, you're better because it actually ends up being some sort of flywheel. So your workflows provide data Data gives you insights. The insights allow you to optimize those workflows over time. So, for example, if you're sending sequences and you don't have good enough reporting, good enough data, and you're just going off reply rates, you could say, oh, wow, I'm getting a 40% reply rate. I'm going to double down on this sequence. But if you're using outreach and you have sentiment, then you'll be able to see that those replies are all unsubscribed, taking off your list, and no thanks. So you're doubling down on something that's not working, but you think it is directional, but it's not actually accurate. So I think, you know, for us, or for what I've seen, if you're using nothing, using any level of automation is going to make you, you're going to make it better. I think if you want to keep getting better over time, you have to use a platform that's going to give you sentiment and attribution, which, you know, we're the only one that does right now, and I think will for a while. So I don't know, maybe I'm biased, but
no, I mean, it's a great, it's a great point, man. You definitely got to have the context to it. You can't just have the high level. And so I think that's amazing. What have you seen like other sales tech stacked on top of something like outreach that you think works exceptional? I'd love to hear your take on that. And then any kind of gaps you see in the market.
Gaps that I see in the market in terms of technology?
Well, like, let's say sales tech, man. So you got outreach. What other things that they complement that really well, like after the fact? So you got your outbound engine going, then what, right? And let's assume you got the basics. You got your CRM down. You're doing other things. Like, where would you take it from there? And then where do you see our, like, in terms of gaps in the market with sales tech that you see? Because I know you invest in a lot of different companies, so it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time because there's not a lot of gaps in the market. There's like way more sales tech than we probably ever need. You know, so there's like your tier one stuff, which is your system of record, or historically your tier one stuff, which is your system record, which is your CRM. Then there's your account and contact level data. So that's like ZoomInfo, your data vendors, whatnot. Then like in some cases, I think you can put LinkedIn in there, like LinkedIn sales solutions, you know, more contextual data. And then I think like a sales engagement platform is probably in squarely in tier one these days. It's their system of action. So if you look at the food pyramid, you got your system of record on the bottom, your system of action. And in between your system of record and your system of action, maybe there's like that data layer. Then after that, you start to get into like the next tier of stuff that's kind of ends up being like more nice to have, but it's, you know, super impactful, super powerful, but more nice to have. And that's where you end up finding, I think, like conversational intelligence, reporting specific companies or forecasting companies, chat solutions. What else falls in that bucket? Like lead routing, meeting software, that kind of stuff. And then you start to kind of cascade down a little further into like tier three, tier four type stuff, which is like the very nice to have. And I think that's reflected in the growth of the companies that you see out there that are, you know, you see hyper growth companies and they're more of a higher priority. If you have 100 jelly beans in a jar and Salesforce takes 60 and your data vendor takes 20 and there's 20 left, and then, you know, sales engagement takes 10 and let's say LinkedIn takes 5, you got 5 left. So like, you know, that's not going to go very far. And some organizations, like, that's all they have room for. In other organizations that have bigger sales budgets, you know, maybe they'll plug in a conversational intelligence. Maybe they'll plug in forecasting. Maybe they'll plug in like a Ambition or Hoopla or Level 11 set sale type stuff, which is, leaderboards and things like that for your reps. So it's really up to the sales leaders on what they prioritize there.
Do you think, let me ask you this, like, cause I think that's a great way to kind of like mentally frame it out with the food pyramid, not like the old school food pyramid where it was like all carbs and like no fat, you know what I mean? Like they used to have when we were growing up.
Wheat and milk. Yeah.
Yeah. Just tons of wheat and milk. No fat. Fat's bad. Right.
Yeah.
I'm going down the train here. And so would you say, like, so obviously you got your CRM like Salesforce, and would you say that you think that outreach has been so successful or fits in that higher tier or sales engagement, if you will, just because it directly and basically creates revenue and it's fast. I mean, would you say like those are the two variables that people look at in terms of that spending model, or what would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an ROI game probably at that point. So like, what are the things that are going to generate the most ROI for us? And everybody can have an ROI conversation. Like you could be super low on that priority list and find a way to have an ROI conversation. Like you could be, I don't know what I would consider the lowest thing on those lists, but you know, the gamification software is probably in the, you know, tier three, tier four, which is, I wouldn't say at the end, but in the middle. And even that type of stuff is, yeah, it's, you know, we don't have budget for this right now. But if your reps are competing against each other, they're going to perform better because they're going to be competitive and it builds culture and morale. And then your reps are going to stay longer and, you know, yeah, they're going to sell more. And it's like, you can make an argument for everything that's, you know, higher ROI. But like, again, with the jelly beans, like, all right, well, I can spend the money on this or this. That's it. That's all I got. Which one is going to be, which one do I know is going to generate more revenue for us? And then I think like, you know, the companies that are doing really well or have extra cash that I get to do everything, like that's great. Go work for those companies. That's awesome. You get full stack everything. That's great. You can make a ton of money. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, we're just about up on time. And it was great. We covered a lot of things that I didn't think we were going to get into the books that much, but you talked about writing them in days. So you piqued my interest there. And then you hit on a lot of other areas, man, which were basic, but I love how you dug down. So where can people find you? Where can they find out more about you, more about Outreach? And how can they get in touch with you if they need to?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the best place to go and follow me. So you're probably on here already. I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, outreach.io, saleshacker.com, gtmfund.com. So that's go to market GTM. Yeah, that's me. That's where I am. We just launched some new products at Outreach, Success Plans and Kaya, which is our conversation intelligence assistant that does real-time coaching on top of our core sales engagement platform. So fun stuff, fun times. So check that out.
Nice, fam. Well, it was a real pleasure having you on. And, you know, I look forward to seeing you again soon. And thanks for being on the show, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for spending the time with me today. I know that time is one of the most valuable resources, so I truly honor and appreciate you coming along this journey with me. One of the things that I want to ask you is if you really, truly enjoyed this and know someone that this can make an impact on, please share this episode with them. If you're on a journey for financial and lifestyle freedom, it is always exponentially better if we're building a tribe with like-minded people who are on the same journey. In addition, I have an amazing PDF for you that could be career-changing in terms of the content. Essentially, what it is are the top 10 questions that every big customer is asking behind closed doors that no one is telling you about. I'll put a link for it in the show notes, so check it out. It's my free gift for you for being a part of this launch and being a part of this journey with me, and I hope to see you soon.